This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hello and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. You know, Brendan, I was thinking before the podcast started that I don't know how I settled on hello and welcome. Is that what you said when you used to do the introduction? And are we just hello and welcome people?
No, when I started the podcast, I would always say, hail cheaters.
that's actually better.
It's kind of like playing some trumpets as the king enters the court. Hail cheaters. And you're just a little bit more like the podcaster next door.
Yeah, that's why, like, yeah, everybody kind of pines for the podcaster next door, don't they?
They do. I'm picturing you topless right now through your bedroom window.
Brandon, we went to the NYCFC home opener last night, didn't we?
Oh, we did. I am sure happy to not be waiting in line at Yankee Stadium anymore. I mean, we showed up and it was mass chaos with all these fans trying to get in for the home opener like 5 minutes before the game was even meant to kick off.
It was so crazy.
Conspiracy theory about they weren't accepting paper tickets that you printed at home.
Yeah, the lines were so long that two lines actually met, like the ends of the lines met. In this, like, it was like two universes, like, colliding or something.
It was like two
galaxies colliding. It was like everything was just a mess. There was just matter everywhere.
It was. And Franz Kafka actually was the sponsor on Toronto FC's kit. It's really, really bizarre.
It was in, if you go to our Twitter feed, you can actually see a photo of us. This guy, unbeknownst to me until I read a Deadspin article today, this guy posted a Twitter feed of just how crazy this line was. And about 10 seconds of the video, I paused and said, I think that's me. I think I'm in this clip, and you look over and you see two sullen figures talking quietly in this huge line, and that is Brandon and Josh at the 10-second mark.
I don't know if we were talking so much as I was trying to talk to you, and you were so sort of mentally entrenched in the disorder.
I can't. Yeah, I really am.
It's hard for you to focus in situations like that.
It is, and you knew that. You tried your best.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I was engrossed too because the Michigan State was playing the Big Ten Championship Final, and I really, like, it was a very close game, and so I was sort of, the line was stressing me out, and there were like 2 minutes left in that game, which I was, you know, tracking a game on your phone with one of those ESPN trackers is just the most stressful thing.
It really is. I'm like, Josh, who has the ball? Do you know who has the ball? You're like, I have no idea.
It looks like there was a foul. I don't know what team it was on.
So as you can tell, we were basically drowning in sports the entire weekend.
Seriously. Thankfully, there were almost no Premier League games. There were five games this weekend. Although, surprisingly, scores were reasonably high. I mean, it was a game week where you either prepared for it or you didn't. Either you were taking the game seriously enough at this point in the season that you were able to get at least 10 players, if not a full allotment, or you just kind of punted and we saw it in our mini league. which it's just a little easier to trace because there are only 18 teams in that mini league, and it's not quite as competitive as the Hail Shooter Super League. Right. You saw these crazy scores where some people were at 65 and others were at like 7.
Yeah, you know, there was one guy, Andrew Usyk, if you're out there listening, probably not, I don't know. He had 0 points at the end of Saturday. it was unprecedented.
So
not even the ghostiest of ghost teams had 0 at the end of day one.
It was just a strange week. I finished with 62 points, which I'm reasonably happy with. It's above even the average for the top 1K. I think the average for the top 1K was around 56 points.
Yeah.
I got a nice contribution from Russell Martin, somewhat inexplicably, who picked up.
Unreal. I remember us talking last week about you starting Russell Martin just out of necessity to field a full squad, and it almost pushed you over the top with our head-to-head.
I kind of fought myself on that one a little bit. All week long, I'd planned to drop Chris Smalling and bring in Vincent Kompany. Straight, easy move. So simple. Right. And then just the more I thought about that, the more I thought, well, you know, Norwich at home, they could score a goal. Why am I going with a 3-3-4 formation? You know, three forwards, three defender, or three forwards, three midfielders, four defenders. When I could just have a 3-4-3 and have, you know, 11 starters. Mm-hmm. So I draw. You know, the logic was okay, but you know, so I dropped Payet and I brought in Christian Eriksen. And it wasn't just in a vacuum, you know, I mean, because Eriksen is at home to Bournemouth the next week. And so, it, you know, it could work out long term.
And Spurs are playing against Villa, the crappiest team in all the land.
Exactly. So, but even then, I really should have just brought in a defender. So I kind of, I just outthought myself a little bit there. And so, you know, I 62 points, I kind of wish I'd done a little bit better. How about you?
Yeah, well, all of our naysaying about the Manchester City midfield last week, I went back on that, and I ended up bringing in David Silva.
And I was stunned when you brought in Silva. I mean, you straight up said don't bring in David Silva on last week's podcast.
Yeah, I mean, like you, I totally overthought it, and I also, well, I wouldn't even say overthought it. I just totally succumbed to groupthink on this one. Mm-hmm. I had Harry Kane, and hindsight, of course, as we all know, is 20/20, but I had Harry Kane captained up until the moment I went to bed on Friday night. Mm-hmm. And for us in the States, that's like the decision deadline.
Right.
And
because you just never know if you'll wake up early enough.
It's true. And I ended up captaining an Aguero instead, but I used my two free transfers.
Wait, so you went to bed with Kane. Did you wake up in the middle of the night, or were you like lying in bed just thinking about the game week and you just couldn't do it?
Let me paint a picture for you, Josh. So okay. I'm getting ready for bed. I've got the side table light on next to my pillow.
Had you been drinking?
Heavily. My wife was actually out of town, so I was coming off of a 5-hour binge of drinking beer and playing Star Wars Battlefront on my PlayStation.
Okay.
So I'm moseying up to bed, and, you know, I take my pills, throw back some water. Mm-hmm. Right before I turn off my bedside light, I'm like, Captain Aguero. Rub my hands together, job done. Good night, see you in the morning.
I captain Aguero too, and you can get into a lot of ex post facto thinking about this, you know, like, oh, you know, Aguero, why would you do that? That's the conventional, you know, like the, you know, Harry Kane away at Aston Villa. I mean, Norwich have like arguably the worst defense in the league. Sergio Aguero was arguably the best player in the Premier League. Right. He had just come off a game where he scored 2 goals.
Yeah.
It just, there was a lot of the you can't get mad at yourself when, you know, these guys, they don't score every match. Even the best players don't score every match. And, you know, it was disappointing because they didn't even really see, like, it wasn't like they had Norwich on the back foot the whole match. I mean, Norwich was as likely to score as Man City in this game.
Yeah, there was approximately zero cutting edge with that City team.
Yeah, and Patrick Bamford almost won that game for him.
That would have rocked my world. It wiped out my Joe Hart clean sheet. So my other transfer was bringing Gylfi Sigurdsson in because I had two frees. So I kind of decimated my midfield in the process, dropping Ozil and Payet. So we'll see how that bears out. I'm not terribly concerned about losing those two guys because, I mean, we can look at the fixtures for Arsenal and West Ham coming up. But, yeah, in the end, I end up with 66 points altogether. Yeah, well, pretty pleased with that.
And you know you are wild carding sometime in the next couple of weeks, so it's not too dire.
It's not too Eric dire.
So recording this on Monday night, it's after Leicester's 1-0 win, so we don't actually have any information on the Hail Cheaters Super League to share right now. Although you wanted to note a couple things, Brandon, I see from your show notes here.
I did, because it's kind of a weird week with five matches. I was just curious to see what the top 10 managers in the Hail Cheaters Super League were up to, the decisions they were making, and William C., team name 3 at the back, immediately jumped out. He actually had the foresight to captain Harry Kane. He ends up finishing with a whopping 87 points. So we'll see how far that pushes William C. up the Hail Cheaters rankings. And then Gare Meld also put his faith in the Spurs squad, and he captained Ali.
I love that move. See, this is why these guys are in the top 10.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, two of our top 10. The rest of them all captained Aguero. So, yeah, like you say, Josh, well, as soon as the tables update, we're going to post that on social media and make sure everybody gets their true and proper due.
So we can't really talk to – so just to, like, throw it out there right at the start, there's not a lot we can say still about the double game weeks. We've covered them a little bit in earlier podcasts, and they still haven't been announced. It's going to be a strange – we've never – okay, so just really starting with game week 30, we are really in uncharted territory from a fantasy perspective because we've never – most people still have their – at least people who are still listening to this podcast – most of them still have, as we actually found out from our poll recently, most people have still not used their second half wild card. We've never had chips before. We've never had a game week. As far as I can recall, I can't remember a single game week where you only had five games, right? I mean, in the 5 years of playing the fantasy
league, I can't recall it either.
Yeah. So there are just tons of games left. There are 10 matches that still need to be rescheduled. There's this website or a Twitter feed, Fantasy Footy 24/7, that posted a really nice kind of breakdown of all the matches that still need to be played. But just to break down the teams, there's Everton have three matches to play. That is to say, three matches to make up.
Liverpool, which is incredible.
It is incredible. Liverpool, West Ham, Watford, Man United, and Crystal Palace all have two each. And then Man City, Newcastle, Chelsea, Sunderland, Arsenal, West Brom, and Norwich have games to make up too. So that is just a huge. I mean, how many? That's 3, 6, 9. That's 13 out of 20 teams that have double game week still to come.
What are the odds of those all being played in game week 38, Josh?
Yeah, we talked about this before the podcast. Has that ever happened? I can't imagine that you would have the final. You know, all the matches are on at 10 o'clock. You know, or at 3 p.m. in the UK. Uh-huh. There's no way that you would play all of those matches, then have like three matches scheduled for the following Tuesday.
Yeah, then have a Crystal Palace Everton game.
Yeah, there's just no way.
Just to round it out. That is my fantasy, though. It really is a game changer. It goes to show you, and I think we saw this, like we were saying, about all the blanks and ghost teams being exposed in this really slim game week. With all of these fixtures still on the table, our overall rankings are going to wildly change over the course of the next 8 game weeks.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, despite having a very miserable season, I'm actually up about 500,000 spots just in the last 2 game weeks alone.
I have some pretty incredible news. I actually just broke the top 10,000.
All right. Is that top 10,000?
In USA.
Oh, well, you kind of buried the lead there.
I'm hovering around the 200,000 marker right now overall. But yeah, when it comes to the USA, I'm top 10,000 all the way.
Well, that's not too bad. All right. Well, I'm happy for you, Brandon. Maybe you'll crack the top 8,000. You know, in the next couple weeks.
All right. So, should we just recap? Because there were so few fixtures, we can just go ahead and run through the scores of all the games that actually happened in game week 30.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, honestly, there's not too much to talk about with these fixtures, so we won't spend too long on them, outside of maybe Spurs-Aston Villa, which is kind of an interesting match. Okay, first match, Norwich-Man City. Norwich just wanted they wanted it more. I mean, I know they didn't win, but it's a pretty heroic performance. And there was a moment, I don't know if you watched the full match, from maybe the 30th minute to the 45th.
I did, yeah.
Where Norwich really looked like the better team. I mean, they're really, really, playing hard. Had Man City in the back foot. Bamford almost scores. In that moment, I thought, I don't know if anyone's going to score in this game.
Yeah, and you could feel the Norwich home crowd really getting behind them and recognizing that they were giving it their all. I probably won't work out for them by the end of the season, but it totally exposed Man City's lack of desire, which has sort of plagued their whole season.
I know, and it, you know, really is over for them right now. I mean, I think that they're now. You know, they have a game in hand on Leicester, but they're 12 points off. So even if they make up that game in hand, they're 9 points back of Leicester. And I just don't know that they can make up 9 points in the last 8 game weeks.
So here's where the psychoanalysis begins. Now that Man City, the only thing they really have to play for is to hold the line in the top four.
They actually have a pretty big Champions League match today.
It's true, and it looks like they'll go through, so that's their main focus. So then how are we feeling about the likes of Sergio Aguero or those of us who brought in David Silva? Are we going to be able to get any points out of them for the rest of the season, or are they just going to be the sleepwalking team that we've seen?
I really don't know, Brandon.
I need an answer. I need to know what transfer I need to make.
You know, we were just talking about the teams that have double game weeks. You know, so Man City actually only have one double game week. So, you know, I really wonder if at some point, you know, I know a lot of people are talking about the Vardy to Lukaku move, you know, dropping Vardy and bringing in Lukaku. The better move might be to drop Aguero and bring in Lukaku. It's still to be determined what game week you'd want to do that, but I think long term that might be the right move.
Yeah, I agree, because, I mean, even though Vardy is going through a considerable drought right now, you do think that Leicester team has a lot more fight. They have so much more to play for within the league, to be clear about that, right, that you'd think Vardy stands to score more goals in the next 8 game weeks than Aguero.
So we don't think that there'll be double game weeks in game weeks 31 or 32. And that actually serves Everton pretty well because they have Arsenal at home, Man United away. So fine. You don't really want the Everton players for those 2 matches. After that, the fixtures really, they really loosen up, and they have Watford, Southampton, Crystal Palace, Bournemouth, Norwich on the final day of the season. So you can really ride out Everton the rest of the season.
So that'll be the question that plagues us, is up to game week 33, who is the striker between Vardy, Kane, and Aguero that we drop? I'm just sort of hoping that somebody twangs their hamstring and makes that decision for us, because it seems like a pretty difficult decision right now.
It is a difficult decision. I mean, you know, Harry Kane, who seems like he hasn't done as well as last season, has now tied Jamie Vardy for the most goals on the season. And don't they have 19 apiece?
Yeah, they are both on 19. And, I mean, I'm kind of shocked that Harry Kane didn't overtake him. And I guess I'm also shocked that Vardy didn't score, because I promised all the cheaters out there free tacos if you didn't score against Newcastle. So
yeah,
between that and my 3-0 prediction, Spurs beating Villa, I am accepting all of your taco orders on Twitter. So just tell me if you want sour cream, you want guacamole, if you want carnitas or brisket, whatever you want.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. That's nice of you. So Man City, Norwich, I don't think there's anything really to say about Norwich here. I mean, they play, you know, not from a fantasy perspective.
Certainly a lot of people might have lucked into a few clean sheets, given they were playing a lot of their bench. Yeah, Ryan Bennett.
If anybody still has Norwich, I mean, it's insane that I still have a Norwich player. I mean, no one should have a Norwich player.
Shame on you.
Outside of Dan Mercy Mbakani, I mean, he's the one must-own player. But, you know, him aside... in the midfield is just, for, you know, so Man City, you know, we talked about Aguero at the beginning of the podcast. It was not unreasonable to captain him for this match, but, you know, another disappointing game week from him. I mean, it's like he just trades, you know, he's not consistent at all this year. I mean, we're not looking at a Luis Suarez in 2014 kind of season. It's just, you know, he has matches where he's completely off the ball, you know, and I don't know. I mean, you know,
I think he's not helped by how decimated that City midfield is right now. Jesus Navas isn't the guy that's going to be serving up assists. It's all down to Silva.
I mean, Aguero is definitely a droppable player at this point, I think. It's just, you know, I mean, I don't plan to do it this game week, but I do not think of him as a must-own player anymore.
It's just such a scary thought. I mean, he is the best striker on paper in the league. And it's like me, before I go to bed, I'm like, well, I should just captain Aguero because I'm scared of what he yeah. might do on any given just, day. So
in the last, I totally hear you. I feel exactly. I mean, that's why I captained him. I felt the same way. But, you know, in the last six game weeks, he's, you know, 5 points, 6 points, 2 points, 2 points, 11 points, 2 points.
Yeah.
You know, and that includes a missed penalty. It's just, I don't know. It's just, that's just not that great, you know, in terms of performance. I mean, Romelu Lukaku has performed better over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, and he blanked.
Yeah, and he didn't score. He didn't even play this week.
All right, let's move on to the next fixture.
That brings us to the second match, Brandon. Bournemouth-Swansea. Bournemouth win 3-2. Once again, a combination of completely random players scores the goals for Bournemouth. Charlie Daniels, the absolute star, like the one must-have player in this team, finishes with 1 point in this match.
Which is very satisfying for us as non-Daniels owners. He's become a super divisive FPL figure, I think, in that the owners that have him are just crushing it, and the owners that don't. Are just very bitter about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not divisive in the sense that, like, some people think he's good and some people think he's bad. Divisive in the sense that, like, we're all really stressed out that we don't have him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Leighton Baines-esque.
The 4.3 million defender Steve Cook scores his second goal in three matches. It's just incredible. I mean, I wonder if there's a defender that hasn't scored on this team this year.
I sincerely doubt it.
Adam Smith has two goals. Steve Cook has three goals. Charlie Daniels has like 30 goals. He's got three goals and five assists, but it feels like 30.
What about Simon Francis?
Simon Francis, good question. And remember, no goals, but two assists for him. Do you remember when Simon Francis was the go-to player on this team too?
Yeah, I remember starting game week one with Simon Francis. Never laid eyes on the man.
Team. No goals, but two assists and eight bonus points in the season. So, you know, pretty bad. Pretty solid for a 4.1 million defender.
Yeah, and they must be pleased to have Max Gradle back. So he looks like he'll be a fixture in their midfield for sure going forward. And, you know, he looked good for a guy coming in after a ligament injury. But you must be pretty bummed about the 9-point king. Ashley Williams.
I was pretty bummed, and you know, I basically was waiting for. I needed a Williams goal to reverse my fortunes, and it was too much to ask. Two goals, and I guess it would have been three matches for Williams. But you know, that's all right. I got nine from Siggy, and so I felt pretty good about this match. Charlie Daniels pulled up a 1-pointer, which I was pretty happy about, just from a overall rank perspective.
Yeah.
What did you think about this match?
Well, I'm setting this up as your always cheating punt of the week. I mean, you could treat it as a punt, or you could treat it just as a solid team management move. So Modu Barrow out on the right wing for Swansea looked really great. He scored a fantastic goal cutting in Aaron Robin style. Mm-hmm. And there he is. He's a fixture now in the Swansea starting lineup, and he's priced at 4.3. So like me, I'm sure a lot of people are out there suffering with Junior Stanislaus sitting injured on your bench,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, collecting that dust, losing value.
That had to be painful for you. Not, I'm actually surprised you didn't just drop Stanislaus. I mean, and bring in like some 4 million midfielder.
Yeah,
instead of Ozil, who you've had for all 30 weeks.
I know, it does go a little bit against what we were saying last week about treating this really lean game week as a time to sort of clean house and set up your team for the coming weeks. And I just decided to go for it. Mm-hmm. And dropping Paya and Ozil could, I mean, there's no way I can get Ozil back now without totally, you know, disrupting. I mean, I have disrupted the foundation of my team just by getting rid of him. I think I lost 0.7 million in the process.
Yeah, I mean, that is stunning. I can't. I was shocked when you dropped Mesut Ozil.
Well, I mean, let me just say this: Ozil is despite the ups and downs of Arsenal's season, Ozil has kind of been a consistent FPL player, and he's been great for my team. He's, you know, I attribute lots of my victories week in, week out to an late Ozil assist and 3 BPS.
Five goals, 18 assists, 30 bonus points.
Yeah, it's inarguable that he has been one of the best FPL players this season. But the state of that Arsenal team does make me worry about what sort of performances we're going to see from Ozil for the rest of the season going forward. And I don't know, I feel like it could conceivably be the right time to look at other options.
Okay, I think you're crazy. If I had Ozil at 8.5, I never would have done that. But, you know, maybe it'll work out. Maybe David Silva will really come through in the Manchester Derby and you'll be, you know.
I'll be rolling. Laughing.
You'll be laughing. You can never look at a transfer in a vacuum. That's like the theme of the season. You know, any one game week is just not enough evidence to decide whether it was a good transfer or a bad transfer.
It's true. I will be sweating it, though.
Yeah, that's reasonable. All right, let's move on to Stoke, Southampton, Pele, you know, whatever. I mean, his ownership has got to be like, let's pull it up here real quick. I think it's probably like sub. What do you think? If you had to take a wild guess what Pele's ownership was.
I'm going to guess actually 10%.
7.3%.
Okay.
So that's actually higher than I was expecting for somebody who has barely played.
Well, I just think that he was hot early in the season, and imagining how many managers dropped out of participation around the time that his form was tailing off. So I suspect a lot of that ownership are ghost teams.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah, like total late season troll on Pele's part. I don't think anybody's buying it.
I'm not buying it. I certainly wouldn't look at Pele as someone to bring in.
And that second goal he scored was kind of ridiculous. It went through all those Stoke defenders, and Butland sort of tried to dive at it. It was a very strange goal. I mean, I guess as a keeper, it's hard for you to eye that ball coming through all those defenders. But still, it's kind of a garbage goal.
It was amazing because I was actually when the day started, I was kind of kicking myself because I was going to bring in Butland for Schmeichel, and then I just kind of forgot to do it. You know, sometimes it's hard to remember what goalkeeper you have in your lineup. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's like I feel like when I look at my lineup, it's like I'm looking at my formation. I'm looking at the midfield forwards, and sometimes you're when you set that team at the beginning of each game week, you just For me, it usually takes like 5 seconds, right? It's like I know, I'm gonna pick this guy or this guy, and then that's it.
It's pretty black and white. I think usually people on their team, they have their premier goalkeeper and their backup.
Right, and for me, you know, I've done a rotation, especially the last 10 weeks or so with Schmeichel and Butland, and I just thought, well, okay, I think that I was a little worried about the new manager bump for Newcastle. I thought they might play better, which they did in this match, in today's match. And I thought, well, Butland, home to Southampton, they haven't scored a lot of goals on the road this year. So then I woke up in the morning and I realized I forgot to do it. And I thought, I kind of missed my chance. And then naturally, Southampton scored. I think they scored like 2 goals. It was like in the first 30 minutes of the match or something.
Yeah.
And so it was a mistake that really paid off.
Hey, and I promised the Tadic game or the Tadic prequel to the Tadic game. And in a way, it was the Tadic game in that he missed like an open breakaway where he should have just slotted it in the goal and he decided to Tadic it. Mm-hmm. He was brought down for a penalty that wasn't called. So that was a remarkable Tadic moment.
He did pick up a Giroux, though. I now call a Giroux a 5-point game. Because really Giroud's specialty now is to not score but head one ball down to somebody at some point in the match, which they then score on.
Yeah, that's kind of the form Vardy's on right now as well.
Yeah, it's true. He's racking up a lot of Giroud's. Arnautovic scores, picks up 9 points, a bit of a differential perhaps. His ownership is actually around 20%, so he's not a huge differential. I was really more on the Shaqiri bandwagon. He was the player that I thought about bringing in. He actually only racked up 1 point in this match.
Right.
Maybe it's Arnautovic, or maybe you just avoid both of them.
Stoke they just seem problematic. They're in 1 week, out the next, and Arnautovic especially is just so mercurial. A great player. The weeks that he does do something, you're really kicking yourself for not having him.
Yeah, I think exactly, and I think that the Stoke defense is problematic too. I think it's time to when I finally do play my wild card. Whenever they announce these double game weeks, I'm as much as I admired Butland as a goalkeeper, I do not think he'll be on my team post wild card.
But so speaking of defense, where are we with the Southampton defense? I mean, is the backlash happening? They're like 4 clean sheet wipeouts in a row after that epic 6-game run. Was it 6 or 7 matches where they kept a clean sheet? And and now it's four wipeouts in a row. I don't know that there are any better options than Southampton right now.
I don't know that there really are either. I'm not looking to drop Van Dijk at the moment. I mean, Liverpool at home is not a great fixture, but you could see a clean sheet there. Leicester away, it's possible. I mean, that could be a nil-nil match. And then they play Newcastle and Aston Villa. So I'm not thinking about dropping Van Dijk.
And Van Dijk is a great goal threat as well. So every corner kick, it could be a Van Dijk time.
Yeah, exactly. He could have scored on that first Pelé goal. Yeah, he was basically right behind Pelé.
Uh huh.
Yeah, Southampton, they'll be fine. Don't worry so much, Brandon, about Southampton. They're gonna be great.
All right, I'll keep my anxiety in check.
Aston Villa Spurs 2-0 win, 2 Kane goals, 2 Ellie assists. Spurs clean sheet. I mean, this is basically exactly what you would predict for this match. I think this is actually what we did predict for this match.
Well, I guaranteed my Taco Tuesday 3-0. So it's just one goal off of my prediction. But
I certainly could have scored three.
Okay, so what I would say about this game is, I mean, Villa forced Spurs to work really hard for the first 30 minutes. I mean, actually for the first 45 minutes of this game. And it wasn't quite clear how it was going to go. But the other big fantasy takeaway is, what, the Spurs defense makes you sweat for 90 minutes. They're really good, but they're really good at making you sweat. Like a good CNC Music Factory song.
They're going to make you sweat.
Yeah, they are. But when... because I had a Spurs defender and you didn't. So if I'm just looking at our head-to-head, when Rudi Gestede puts this rebound off the crossbar from like 6 yards out, and then Lescott does virtually the same thing moments later.
Yeah, he was offside, though.
It's true. The flag did go up. But they're just strange that there are always these holes in the Spurs defense, but they get away with it.
So game week 31, Aston Villa visits Swansea. Are you tempted to captain Sigurdsson for this match?
Marginally, and I think maybe I'm just biased, me being a fearful FPL manager.
Right. So at midnight on Friday, you're going to go Aguero again?
Oh, yeah. I'm probably going to have the armband on Huth for a majority of the week, and then I'm just going to go Aguero all the way. I mean, Huth's head touches the ball on every single Leicester corner kick. It's a lock. It's a guarantee. His problem is he just puts his head up, and the ball more or less bounces off of his head, and it just sort of depends on which direction it goes. But I mean, Sigurdsson's form is incredible, and I mean, it's just my own bias that I don't think of him as a blockbuster player, but his form right now and that finish he had in the Bournemouth game was sensational. So, I mean, there's an easy case to be made.
The last thing I want to say about this match is Bafétimbi Gomis had a wonderful moment, I don't know if you saw it, where he had a goal-saving tackle against his own team. There was a ball that was rolling into the net, and Gomis slid and basically knocked it out. It was insane. It was I don't know what happened. It's like he's so determined not to score that it's now affecting other people. He doesn't want anyone to score.
Yeah, I mean, if Gomis don't score, nobody score.
He scored four matches in a row to start the season, and has now scored one goal in the last 26 matches. It's absolutely incredible.
Against the run of play against Manchester City, incredibly enough.
That's true. I know, which should have been an inspiring 1-1 draw.
Yeah, it truly should have.
All right, so let's move on to the final fixture for the game week. Leicester Newcastle 1-0 Leicester win. Fantastic overhead kick from Okazaki.
I was g-chatting you today. We were both at work following this game, and I g-chatted you that this was a great game week for Japanese players. Okazaki gets an overhead kick goal, and Maya Yoshida played 11 minutes for Southampton.
Whenever anything good happens to Okazaki, I think of I posted this Vine like a month or two ago. It was during the Leicester Spurs FA Cup match, and for whatever reason, my TV it was like the picture was really grainy. It just wasn't coming through, or maybe the reception spot. I can't remember what the issue was, but I ended up watching the match on Spanish language television. Okay. And I don't really speak any Spanish, despite taking like 3 years of it in school. He scored this amazing goal. There was a replayed match, but he scored the first goal in this match. And it was like he like weaved through players. It was an amazing goal. It was like a Messi-esque goal. And the only thing I could make out from the commentator was he just kept saying his name again. It's like, Okazaki, Okazaki, Okazaki. So anytime anything good happens for Okazaki, I just think of this announcer just saying his name.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, he is just another player that embodies why me and everybody else loves Leicester City.
Truly.
Just like awesome, happy, good, fun. I mean,
this is why they're going to win the title, because they're winning games where they play poorly on overhead kicks from their like fifth best player or whatever. You know, it's just if that eighth best player probably. Right. It's incredible. It's fantastic.
So the Leicester defense is still on a roll.
Josh. Absolute must-own. You absolutely need a Leicester defender on your team.
So I've owned Huth since forever, and he's been a fun player to own, except for every time he scores a goal, he's on my bench. But it's kind of a weird BPS system right now, where I think it's kind of difficult to tell whether a central defender or a left or right back is going to be on for the bonus.
And it seems like in general you're better off with left and right backs. The issue is that left and right backs tend to be at a higher risk of rotation.
But if you're looking at the most recent bonus points when Leicester keeps a clean sheet, Fuchs and Simpson are locked in. Simpson got 3 bonus points today, and he's among the cheaper options. So it's like if you are not on the Leicester defense bandwagon yet, Danny Simpson seems to be your guy.
Yeah, or Christian Fuchs. I think either one, really. Okay, so, you know, I was about to say that, you know, left and right backs are more prone to rotation, but they're not more prone to rotation on teams that don't have a lot of squad depth.
Right.
So, you know, in a case like that, I think you're much better off. Interestingly enough, Swansea is an exception to this, and the reason I brought in Ashley Williams instead of one of their left or right backs is because they it's not clear who's going to start for left and right back for Swansea. Like, there's been a lot of rotation there, or probably more like injuries than rotation. But yeah, I think in general, I mean, this Leicester team, I mean, I think that Fuchs has started probably the last. I think he started the last 22 matches in a row. I wonder, you know, Danny Simpson obviously had that red card, but outside of that, he scored, you know. Yeah, same thing with him. Actually, it's interesting, you know. So Fuchs and Simpson both didn't start a match until the 8th match of the season, and both of them started every match since then.
Yeah. So now we're at the like anti Tinkerman stage of the season, where Ranieri is going to stick with what's working and
right.
Sort of ride it out.
But it's interesting when that happened, because it came on the heels of a 2-2 draw to Stoke and that 5-2 loss to Arsenal. So. If Arsenal does not defeat Leicester 5-2, maybe they don't make these two changes that solidify their defense and go on this run to the title. It's entirely possible.
I'm like reading the dead zone right now.
I think that Arsenal paved the way for Leicester's title run.
Oh, those idiots. They shot themselves in the foot yet again.
Yep. Sanchez just had to get greedy and score a hat trick in that match.
All right, Josh, I have this note here. Tell me what you think. The Vardy Ultimatum, the new Robert Ludlum novel.
Mm-hmm.
So the ultimatum is it's not really an ultimatum. It's just it's a quandary. It's the Vardy quandary.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is this goal drought of his reason enough to make that Lukaku move?
Okay.
Basically, I'm asking you, how much faith do you have in Jamie Vardy right now?
Short term, not necessarily. Long term, yes.
Okay.
You know, I think that long term you're going to wild card, and so it's, you know, let's take we talked about Everton a little bit at the start of the podcast. So Leicester, they have 8 matches left. There are no dead ball game weeks. They're not going to miss any matches. There's 8 games straight up. That's how it is the rest of the season.
Right.
So they play. It's Crystal Palace away, Southampton at home, Sunderland away, West Ham home, Swansea home in the next 5.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty good about all 5 of those matches.
I do as well. I feel very good about that.
I mean, I just think if I were desperate to bring in Lukaku, I think I just think I'd be looking at Aguero.
Yeah.
Especially because if Man City win their Champions League match, you know, they know they're not going to win the league. I mean, we talked about the, you know, this a little bit earlier, but, you know, they know they're not going to win the league this year. It's very unlikely that it's going to happen. Right. You know, they maybe have a chance. I mean, honestly, you know, unless Kevin De Bruyne comes back, so they don't really have a chance to win the Champions League either, but at least they have a chance for a deep run there. You know, maybe with a good draw, they can make the semifinals. Yeah. I mean, anything can happen, you know. I mean, Chelsea won the Champions League, you know, 4 years ago, kind of inexplicably, and that was, you know, with a red card in one match. I mean, so you never know. So I think that, you know, given all that, there's a good chance that Aguero doesn't play some of these matches down the stretch.
Yeah, yeah, far out, man. I think I'm with you, and I'd be scared. I'd be more scared to drop Vardy than Aguero right now. I mean, and this is just coming off of game week 30.
Sure. You know, Kane is one you might want to look at, too. You know, after the Bournemouth match, he's, you know, they're away to Liverpool. They play Man United, away to Stoke, and away to Chelsea a couple weeks after that. So it's not a great run-in for Kane. And so I think you could look at a dropping him. The only problem is he might be fixture-proof right now because he's in such good form. Yeah, I don't know. It's just not enough spots. Maybe that's the FPL's change next year, is to add a fourth striker spot.
Hey, if they're going to learn any lessons from MLS fantasy, which I really don't recommend they learn any, because it's kind of a crappy game, but they allow four strikers.
So we're 30 weeks into the season now. I mean, what do you think about these chips? I don't know that I like them. It adds a little excitement because you feel like there's still like a little something to play for. But it just seems so screwy to me. Like, it doesn't feel like... It makes the whole thing seem so up in the air, you know, like what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I think they would be cooler if there was more an incentive to play them more evenly throughout the season. But the fact that everybody's sitting on all their chips, it creates a weird vibe, a weird gamey vibe.
I agree, and it makes it feel like because you know you have a lot of teams in the top 10K that have actually played like their triple captain chip or played their. You know, their bench boost already. And, you know, it's almost like a number of managers have been like sitting there with like a game in hand. You know,
I suppose had we seen some double game weeks earlier in the season, maybe more people would have played these chips and I'd feel differently. But the fact that everyone who's still playing the game has them, it just fills me with a little bit of anxiety.
I mean, it's going to be wild, you know, if Lukaku scores like five goals in a double game week and you triple captain him that game week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You're going to go straight to number one.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. And, you know, it's not going to be that bad for some of these managers. They can still, you know, but let's say like it's, you know, it's a game week where, you know, Man City and Everton have double game weeks and, you know, and like Everton's fixtures are slightly better, but you know, you just want to captain Aguero. You know, Aguero goes down with an injury in the eighth minute of the double game week, and Lukaku scores five goals and picks up six bonus points, and you know, 4 points for starting two matches. And you could score like, you know, well, what is that? Let's see, 20, 24. Let's say he gets 3 points in each. So that'd be 30, triple, that'd be 90. I mean, you know, you could score 90 points and someone else could get 2 points for Aguero if it goes down in the second minute or, you know, the eighth minute or whatever. I mean, you could jump hundreds of thousands. Even if you were in the top like 200K, you could jump super high. So it really is fascinating. I mean, I'm really.
I feel like 10 years from now, we're going to replay this episode and we're going to be like the kids who first discover the internet, like, oh, this is, it's a real game changer. Not quite sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
I will say now that I'm talking about it, it actually makes me more excited because it does offer the opportunity. I mean, even for someone like me who's had a pretty bad season and, you know, I really haven't been in the running for even like third place in our mini league. I mean, that's how bad things have gone. You know, I mean, if I pick a differential double game week guy and I triple captain him and he racks up huge points, then, you know, I could leapfrog, you know, half the league.
Right, which is huge, and that's the fun. But I think this is the problem is we've been talking about these chips for 6 months now.
Yeah.
And nobody's even played a bench boost or a triple captain. Like, none of the top managers have done that. So these are chips that we've known have existed. We've talked about for 6 months, but we don't even know what it's like to play one, ever.
I know it's really strange, and I don't know what the solution is. If it's to, you know, like have first half chips and second half chips, or force you to use
that idea.
Or force you to use one by the 20th week, or you forfeit it. I don't know. There's, you know, there's some. I think they're going to keep tinkering with it. I think because it's not.
If you could invent, if you could invent one chip, what kind of chip would you invent? Because I know what I would invent.
That chip has already been invented, Brandon. That's a Doritos tortilla chip. It's it's the perfect chip. It's salty. It's got a little bit of flavor, but not too much. Like, it doesn't overwhelm you.
It's like a cool, cool ranch is too much.
No, yeah, it's the red bag of Doritos that I really prefer, not the cool ranch Doritos.
So Doritos is really missing out on a big sponsorship deal. Like, they should be sponsoring the FPL chips.
They really are. Or even, like, French fries, right?
Yeah, exactly. Fish and chips. I want to see a chip next year which allows you to bring in one player from your bench after the game week is in progress.
That's, yeah. Oh, so, like, can the game week be over, or is it
I think it's like when the game updates.
So the question is, I wonder, you know. So the thing about the people who are designing the Fantasy Premier League game, I don't think they're worried about us. Like, I don't think the serious players are who they're concerned about. I think that it's the players who are. Who don't care as much about the game, who tend not to be fully engaged all 38 weeks, who kind of want to set it and forget it most of the time.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we have people like that in our league, and it's fine. Like, it's just not – they just don't care quite as much. And there's nothing – you know, there's no – like
– They're living really wonderfully fulfilled lives elsewhere.
Sure. Or at least – or they just have other things that they're more obsessive about or whatever. It's fine. But I think for them, that would be asking too much to be like, you've got to watch these matches and you've got to – and I think any changes they make will be changes that are done before the game week starts.
Right.
Because – or maybe it can be done after all the game weeks, after they're totally completed, you have 24 hours or something like that to bring in a new – I don't know. Even that doesn't seem like something they'd actually do because – I mean, eventually they will get servers that are powerful enough for them to update this stuff right away, right? I mean, it's insane. Like,
it is insane.
You go to, like, Fantasy Football Fix, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, this is, like, the average for the top 1,000. This is, you know, this is what your final score is going to be for the game week. I mean, you know, like, we already know all this stuff. Like, why does it take them so long to churn through this data? I mean, I don't know. It's just –
It's probably a coal-powered server. Right. So, before we leave this Leicester-Newcastle game, I wanted to ask you real quick,
Josh. Are we still on this match?
Yeah, we're still – well,
that was like 20 minutes ago.
We're kings of the sidetrack today. Anybody on this Newcastle team impress you now that Rafa Benitez is in charge?
No.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy question.
You?
No, I don't think so.
All right, let's move on. Twitter, okay. Facebook questions.
Right on, let's do it. What do
let's
we got?
Let's do it. Okay. El Magico asks, would you invest in the Man City defense, or are the recent clean sheets just a reflection of bad opposition in the last two games? I think you could invest in Man City defense. The problem is... you can basically only invest in their center backs because it's very unclear who their starting fullbacks are going to be.
Yeah, you see people who ride in Bakary Sagna or Kolarov, and 1 week they're golden, and then the next week they're truly suffering. But watching the Norwich game, the commentator described Vincent Kompany as imperious, and I thought that was a great descriptor because he does look like back to his old form, old good form.
Imperious is a great word. It sounds like Drago and Rocky IV. That's like my definition of imperious. So in four of the next five game weeks, they've got great fixtures, even six if you want to include Southampton away. Home to Man United, away to Bournemouth, home to West Brom, away to Chelsea, home to Stoke. I mean, they can keep clean sheets in four to five of those games.
Yeah, I agree. And certainly if you still have City defense, keep it and ride it out.
Well, if you have it just depends. I mean, I think that at this point, Kolarov is you can't own him.
Well, yeah, that's true. If you have a guaranteed start, though, Otamendi is kind of a weird. He seems to be a nailed-on starter.
He's overpriced.
He is overpriced. So Vincent Kompany or Joe Hart seem to be your only options.
Yeah, and Hart's not that expensive at 5.7. I mean, I think he's been more expensive in the past.
Yeah,
I think Kompany. If you can afford him, Kompany at 6.3. If you can't afford Kompany, I don't think I would bring anyone else in. Even Bakary Sagna, who started the last two game weeks, I'm still a little nervous. But I mean, they brought him out in the 84th minute. You know, it's just not. I don't know. I'd be nervous
to humiliate him in front of everybody. I'm sure that was the purpose.
You just never want to bring in a defender where you're kind of like wringing your hands in the minutes before the lineup's announced to see if they're actually going to play that game week. You know, I mean, no one wants that kind of. It's just not. It's not worth the transfer. Okay, so next question comes from Siraj Grish.
Hey, Siraj.
He asks, "What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on Everton players, considering the fact that they have three double game week fixtures left to play?" So, we talked about them having these fixtures. We talked about Lukaku quite a bit. Obviously, with all these double game weeks to play, you're going to need a minimum two, probably three Everton players, and that gets a little tricky, to be honest, because.
It's the old chestnut. I feel like we didn't really know what to do with Everton when they were actually playing games.
Ross Barkley, you know, I was lucky enough to have him for that 16-point explosion, you know, but that happened with Lukaku out of the game.
And, yeah, he had two penalties, right? That's how he got them.
And wrapped around that are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So he had eight fixtures with no goals or assists wrapped around this 16-point Hall at home to Newcastle, which is like not even that much of a shocker, right? Like home to Newcastle.
Right.
I think the thing is he's been scoring in other, like he's been scoring in the FA Cup and the League Cup. So it's not like he is, he has been scoring. It just hasn't come, it hasn't really happened in the league for some reason.
Yeah.
But we know he's capable of it. So I think that Ross Barkley is the other player that I would certainly be expecting to bring in.
Yeah. What happened to Gerard Deulofeu? The guy dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, he really did. I don't really know, because he was so dangerous for a while there, too.
Yeah, I guess Aaron Lennon is kind of on form or something like that, and he's been getting the starts instead of Deulofeu, I think, out there on the right. But, okay, so one thing I want to say about Everton real quick is we know Tim Howard is not starting anymore. He lost his spot to Robles. So I follow Tim Howard on Twitter, and I see today he's posted a picture of himself, shirtless, wearing sunglasses, sitting in the sunshine, and he says, "Who needs the locks?" Referring to his hair, obviously, when you've got your tattoos. And he's got all those tattoos there. And then he adds Axe body spray.
So is that an ad? Is that like one of those paid advertorial things?
I'm assuming Axe is sponsoring his tatted up body, but I'm like, what a weird move for Tim Howard, the goalkeeper, to be repping Axe body spray. Oh, and then it's the hashtag Find Your Magic.
Okay. So that's clearly some sort of they paid him like $10,000 to do that or something.
So I'm kind of grossed out by Tim Howard right now, even though we'll always have Belgium.
So they have all these double game weeks coming up. They're actually, I think they're away in all three of those game weeks. So they have to make up. They're away to Liverpool, away to Sunderland, away to Crystal Palace. Now Sunderland and Crystal Palace are not, our teams they could keep clean sheets against, but, certainly wouldn't be surprised if they conceded goals in both those matches. So I guess if I were tripling up on Everton, you would have to go. You have to go with two midfielders, and yeah, I mean, maybe Aaron Lennon. Although, is he going to play game week? You know, he's going to play week in and week out. I mean, he's actually scored in four of the last five matches. But he's probably actually a little underrated as an option. I mean, he's only 5.6 million.
Yeah, I mean, I guess even though Everton can't really keep a clean sheet to save their lives, they might be able to. And a defender during a double game week can actually be a great route to big returns.
And I wrote Patrick Van Aanholt to my league win last year.
Yeah, there you go. And Funes Mori, you know, he's proven really adept scoring on corner kicks, and he's a lock back there in central defense. So he might be an option if you're tripling up, right?
Yeah, and again, it just feels – it all feels very up in the air still because we just don't know when the double game weeks are going to come, and that's such a huge factor. I mean, if they – well, it, you know, so we'll see. It's still up in the air, I think.
The question with Funes is what – so I guess going back to Funes Mori, is John Stones is coming back from injury? Is he – I have no idea if they're going to be able to slot him back into the lineup. That screws up my Funes Mori's pick maybe.
Yeah, I don't really know. I'm just scared of that. I had Seamus Coleman for 10 weeks, and it was completely miserable. I had like one clean sheet out of 8 matches or something like that, and this is an incredible run of fixtures. So I'm not feeling too hot about that Everton. You just never know with the Roberto Martinez team. The point is, we'll see. Definitely planning to bring out at least two. Probably those two are the cliched players you'd expect. You know,
Barkley and Lukaku.
Barkley and Lukaku. Owen O'Keefe says Antonio instead of Payet, Lennon instead of Barkley, risky or decent differential for the home stretch. Just talked about Lennon Barkley. I think that Lennon is definitely an option there. Given that he's scored in 4 of the last 5 matches, I think that we can feel pretty safe in him, continuing to start. I don't know if he started in the FA Cup or not, but that doesn't necessarily make a difference. The way that some managers play certain guys in the cup and certain guys, in the league. Antonio instead of Payet is interesting. It's kind of hard not to be seduced by how well Payet played in the, in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup this weekend.
I was seduced.
You were seduced?
Even though I dropped him from my team. It doesn't bar me from being seduced by Payet.
That's true. I mean, it's maybe you want both, it's, Antonio is only 5.4 million. He's very affordable. He's a great fourth or fifth midfielder. He scored the last 4 matches, or excuse me, scored in the last 3 matches. 11 points, 11 points, 6 points. Great goal celebration.
I agree. Yeah, and they have 2 double game weeks coming up, so doubling up in that midfield.
Yeah,
both of them is going to put you in a really good position when those double game weeks start.
And Payet's a little expensive. I mean, he's 8.2 million. So if you can't afford him, then I think Antonio is a great backup. Scott Gill says, "How many players do you have left from day one?" I have just my 2 keepers, Butland and Schmeichel. And do you want to know a fun fact, Brennan?
Yes, I do want to know a fun fact.
I only have 2 players left from day one. My 2 goalkeepers, Butland and Schmeichel.
Dun dun dun.
Am I Scott Gill?
You might be Scott Gill. Robert Huth, for me, is the only guy who has survived the whole season.
Now that you've dumped Mesut Ozil.
Poor Mesut Ozil.
For David Silva, the player you trashed in the last podcast episode.
I'm such a hypocrite. Look at me. Look at me. I'm a hypocrite. Yeah, I mean, Ozil has probably been as good to me as any other player would have over the course of the season, and I've shown my lack of loyalty.
It is like the longer the season goes on, the more fun it is to have at least one player that you just ride it out the whole year. I had that with, interestingly enough, actually, it was Danny Simpson. My first year in the Premier League, Danny Simpson was playing for Newcastle, and I brought him at 4 million. And I had him on my team all 38 weeks.
Yeah. And how many points did he probably score total? Maybe like 42?
About 42, about one point a week.
Actually, that was the season where Newcastle was like challenging for a Europa spot.
Yeah, that's the Pardew way, Strong's. Oh, that was like the 1 year he kept it up, right? Because they got fifth. I think going into the last game of the season, they could have finished fourth.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the season that he's constantly talking about in the halls of the Crystal Palace offices. Like, hey guys, remember that season?
Yeah, that was me. Don't forget, I can still win a match.
Sure you can, Pards.
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's I'm trying to think of last year. I don't know. I don't know if I had anybody the whole season. I was ruthless last year. That's probably why I did better.
You were ruthless. You used players up and then you left them on the side of the road.
No sentiment at all. So just the 2 keepers, and I probably will have Schmeichel the rest of the year, although, I don't know. I mean, with all the double game weeks coming up, there's a pretty good chance I'll just bring in 2 double game week goalkeepers.
Get that bench boost.
Yeah. Adam Beasley says, with a wild card to use soon, is it better to transfer in 1 or 2 week punts as opposed to inform template players that I get with the wild card anyway? So just to rephrase that a little bit, better to maybe not necessarily bring in the most talented player, but bring in someone who has a great fixture.
Right.
I think that I mostly agree with this, although I think that
probably depends on where you are in your mini league or where you want to end up overall at the end of the season.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was thinking. I mean, because punt is punt means different things to different people. I mean, punt can be like, I'm going to bring in Shaqiri and captain him this game week, you know,
a weighted
Chelsea or whatever, you know, just because why not, you know, and if it works out, it's going to be great. But other punts are like, I'm going to captain Sigurdsson this weekend. Like, it's not a insane punt, but it's a slightly risky move, you know. Right. But the fixture is great, and he's in good form. You know, like, so, I mean, I'm certainly thinking that way myself in terms of who I'm bringing in. You know, I'm probably going to bring in a defender this game week, and so all I'm looking at are the next two or three game weeks because, you know, I know that it's probably, you know, game week 32 or 33 is when I'm going to play my wild card.
Right.
So, you know, there's no point in overthinking this. You know, I'm not going to look at a 6 week projection with 8 weeks left in the season with a wild card to come in 2 weeks. So, so basically I do agree. Although I think that, in the end, I'm not reckless enough, maybe to my detriment. you know, I mean, captain Aguero was the most conservative play I could make this week, you know?
And, yeah.
And he performed worse than any player on my team except for Ashley Williams. If I had captain literally any other player, including Norwich's Russell Martin, I would have scored more points this week.
They talked a little bit about this on the last week's Fantasy Football Scout podcast and about various strategies if you're trying to catch up in your mini league. And I think the same applies here in that it's, I don't know that it's useful to think about this in such black and white terms. Like, you can do both. You can transfer in template players that are going to help you long term, and you can also bring in punts at the same time when you're playing your wild card.
Yeah.
So I think you just sort of feel out where you think there are going to be some sure clean sheets, and maybe there's a punt in the midfield or up top where you could gain some points. Or even punt on a few clean sheets, but you're not going to bring in 15 punts.
We've just said the word punt like way too many times. Like it's like when you ever say a word so many times, it like starts to like lose its meaning. You know, sure. Like that's what's happening with the word punt right now. We've said it so many times, it's like the word is like all the letters have like come apart in my head. Anyway, all right, let's move on. Soccer captains, our friend Tim Shaw says, "What was your favorite wacky formation from game week 30?" I don't have an answer to that, Brendan.
this is the part of SportsCenter right before they throw it to commercial.
Like, yeah, these are.
Well, okay, so this is something that I learned actually from our Hail Cheaters top 10 manager, Colin Bothwell. He, I don't know if he invented this, but something he was calling bench wankers.
Okay.
So in a game week like this, where it's really lean on fixtures and you know you're going to have all auto substitutions, you just bench all the guys, all your big players who you know are just going to auto sub because of blanks.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, everybody thinks you have a really low score, but then when all your auto subs come in at the end of the game week, your score jumps up by, like, he had Harry Kane, Jamie Vardy, and maybe Dele Alli on his bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of interesting. Yeah, I guess it's kind of fun to not know, although I feel like I'd want to. I don't know. I feel like that I would like. I would, it
you,
would annoy
you sound
me
you sound like so much fun right now, Josh.
that doesn't like. Would you do that? That doesn't sound like fun to me.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe you're gonna like try your hand at bench wankerism.
Exactly. You never know, Josh. I try anything once.
Yeah. So, Brennan, those are our questions for this game week. Let's move on to the optimizer.
Let's do it.
All right.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to optimize.
All right. Excellent. first, okay, once again, let's run through these. I feel like sometimes we get a little long-winded. You know, I think we get a little tired at the end of the podcast, you know, spending too long on these matches. So let's try to keep it to about a minute a match.
Okay, Josh. Instructions are heard loud and clear. Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. First match, Everton-Arsenal, early morning match. Everton host Arsenal. I find this to be a very difficult match to predict because these are probably the two least reliable teams in the league.
That's why I'm going to go for an Everton win here. And I think they're going to have one of their barnstorming games, and they're going to win 3-0.
Does that tempt you to bring in Lukaku? Would you think about that?
See, that's a very good question and something that we ask of ourselves every time we revisit a game week before the podcast. Are we going to put our money where our mouths are?
Right.
These crazy predictions. You know, I'm willing to admit that's just a prediction. And maybe I'm having a little bit of fun with it, but I do see that as a possibility. Maybe not as clear a possibility for me to bring in Lukaku.
Yeah, it's all going so pear-shaped for Arsenal right now. I mean, Aaron Ramsey's out for, I think, 4 weeks. You know, and that guy is probably the one guy who really – I mean, you know, Alexis Sanchez plays a lot of fire too, but he's really out of form. And it's just – it's so classic that Aaron Ramsey, like immediately after scoring this amazing goal in the North London Derby, you know, gets injured and is out for several weeks. And, you know, I just – it might be over for Arsenal, or it might be that their backs are now so against the wall that they're going to rally with, you know, Joel Campbell and Awobi and whoever else is playing, you know, for them. So yeah. I'll predict a 1-1 draw here. I think that Arsenal could scratch out a goal, and I think Everton will disappoint as they have so many times this year.
Let me say this. If something happens before the weekend that upsets the top three template strikers, I will bring in Lukaku. And that's an always cheating guarantee.
I like it. Okay. Chelsea, West Ham. Feeling a little nervous now about dropping Payet. Now that Diego Costa is not going to be playing this game week because of his red card.
Why does that make you nervous? I mean, Costa just plays up front and bothers the defenders.
I just think that he does. I mean, he forces the midfielders to play a little. Like, he's such a terror, you know, when he's in good form, that it forces everyone has to play a little bit differently with him.
Right.
And I just think that Everton that West Ham can really control that match without, you know, now they're not dealing with Diego Costa, who's the one guy on Chelsea who seems to be playing with a lot of fire this year.
Yeah, I tend to
For better and worse, you know.
Yeah. I think it'll be a very hotly contested game. I don't know. I'm feeling good about Chelsea's form. They've yet to lose a game in the league under Hiddink. I think they continue it, and I think they beat West Ham.
Okay, so we're going to disagree here, because I think West Ham is going to win this match, and I think they're going to win 2-1.
I say 2-1 the other way.
All right. How are you feeling about the Azpilicueta bring-in? Are you?
I kind of don't think about it at all, and not in a good way, not in a set it and forget it sort of way. Azpilicueta just hasn't quite been good enough. I've gotten an assist from him since I brought him in, and not a whole lot of clean sheets.
Yeah,
like one clean sheet and one assist. One.
Yeah,
it's really not good enough.
Crystal Palace, moving on. Crystal Palace, Leicester. Leicester, I just feel pretty good about Leicester. I don't think they'll play as poorly in another match as they. I mean, I don't think they'll play as poorly in this match as they did at home to Newcastle. I don't know if they. I mean, I guess it worked, their strategy of basically scoring one goal and then sitting back for the next 60 minutes. I mean,
yeah, they had trouble controlling the game at some points during the second half, but. Ultimately, I think in the last 5-10 minutes, they were able to professionally kill that Newcastle game.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that Mahrez is an interesting option in this Crystal Palace match, too. I don't think that the Crystal Palace defense, which was really fearsome for a stretch there in the middle of the season, is conceding goals left and right. They're still scoring the defenders, but they're still they're conceding a lot of goals. So I think that I think that Leicester will win this one, 2-0 or maybe 2-1.
Yep, totally agree. I have nothing more to contribute to that. I mean, I feel like because Leicester is coming off of that run where they were playing all the Giants and now they're playing all the the mid to lower table teams. After that Newcastle match, I think they're sort of starting to find more of an equilibrium,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting used to playing that caliber of Premier League team. And I think I see it getting easier and easier for them as these fixtures roll on.
I hope so. With the 5-point lead and 8 weeks to go, I mean, I'm feeling nervous now as a fan, you know,
they're too close and
yeah.
And it would be just so painful as a neutral to see them lose it now.
Oh, I mean, can you imagine? It's like, it was bad enough a couple of years ago when Liverpool lost, you know, was it a 5-point lead or something like that? I mean, that Gerrard's, I'm not even a Liverpool fan, but that, the Gerrard slip, I mean, that was,
yeah,
I still think about that sometimes.
All the heroes of the game, like Brendan Rodgers and Mamadou Sakho, they could have been heroes.
They could have, if just for 1 year. All right, Watford hosts Stoke. Not a believer in Stoke anymore. Impressed that Watford made it the FA Cup semifinal and has a pretty good shot at the final, I'd say.
They do, yeah. Go Watford. I would love to see Troy Deeney get a game-winning goal at Wembley. I think that would definitely make his lifetime.
I think this is a fairly straightforward 2-0 Watford win.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I really can't muster any cares for Stoke right now.
Agallo has not been scoring a lot in the league, but he got back on the score sheet with a pretty good goal in the Arsenal FA Cup match. I don't know if you saw that goal. It was a classic Agallo goal. I mean, just a, you know, turn and strike.
Yep, I did see it. It was classic. And yeah, I'd love to see him back to his scoring ways now that nobody has him in the FPL game anymore.
Right. West Brom, Norwich, not a fun game from a fantasy perspective. West Brom are such a pest right now. I mean, I guess you have to at least nod your head at Rondon, like just in approval, because he's doing a lot of things. Like
this is directed right at you, Adam Beasley. This is a punt. A punter's punt. I'm going to see how many more times I can say punt before we press the button on this podcast.
I guess I'll pick a 1-0 West Brom win. I don't feel good about it, though.
Yeah, I mean, Norwich is fighting for their lives, so you have to nod to Norwich, much like you nodded to Rondon. I'll nod to Norwich's just straight-up need for points. I think it's going to be a tough game for West Brom. And hey, hashtag free Mo Bacani. Let's see Mo Bacani score 2 goals here.
Let's see Mo. I mean, Norwich, yeah. Just as a brief aside here, 4 teams left in the relegation spots, I'd say. I mean, Swansea and Crystal Palace are 8 points above Bournemouth. I think they're probably pretty safe. Did I say Bournemouth? I'm sorry. Swansea and Crystal Palace. Bournemouth's actually much, much further up. Swansea and Crystal Palace are in 15th and 16th place. And then you have Sunderland, Norwich, Newcastle, Aston Villa. So Aston Villa, we think, is going down. Newcastle, Norwich, Sunderland are at 25, 25, and 24. So who do you think is going down of those three?
Norwich, I think, is definitely going to be among the three. And I think we'll know a lot more after the Tyne-Wear Derby.
Oh, come on. Just pick one.
I'm going to pick... Okay, so I'm going to pick Newcastle.
Okay.
I feel like Big Sam, you know, he doesn't get relegated, but Rafa Benitez, he's got this, like, pedigree, right? Like, he's managed every like, gold standard team under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Big Sam will relish the opportunity to beat Benitez out of the drop. So that's kind of what I'm going for.
I think that I agree with you on that. And I just having just watched the Newcastle Leicester match, or at least as much of it as I could like kind of keep an eye on while I was at work. Just in case anybody at work is listening to this podcast, I just think that I don't know where the goals are going to come from for Newcastle. You didn't see it in that match. I mean, I know that they've picked up some goals here and there from Wijnaldum and Jose Perez and in Voldemort in the last several weeks. But I just don't think there's enough. I don't think they can score enough goals to stay out of the relegation spots. I mean,
yeah, they're just not organized enough.
Yeah, I mean, Jermaine Defoe is exactly the kind of player that they need. Jermaine Defoe is just ruthless. Yeah. You know, it's not that he's an absolutely brilliant striker, but he's just.
He's clinical.
He's clinical. He's going to get you your goals, and he's going to win a couple games just because he's going to go off for two or three goals in a match.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think Newcastle is one of those teams where they have to go down. They have to hit rock bottom before they can sort of clean up their act.
Yep, I agree. Swansea, I hope so. I'd love to see Mike Ashley leave, like most Newcastle fans.
Right, yeah. I'm not hating on Newcastle. I'm just sort of like, Fulham fan, I totally sympathize with the dire straits.
It's depressing to think of either Newcastle or Sunderland going down. I mean, those are, huge fan bases, like really established Premier League sides, but it's almost certainly going to be one of the two.
Hashtag Toon Army.
Swansea, Aston Villa. This is the late game on Saturday. Definitely thinking about captaining Sigurdsson in this match. I really, if Harry Kane weren't home to Bournemouth, I'd be even more excited about it. But I might do it anyway. This to me is like a 3-0. I mean, Aston Villa is going down, no doubt about it now.
Yeah,
this is like a 3-0 Swansea win.
Yeah, I mean, Villa gave it their best for a half against Spurs, and then. Like all the air came out, and the fact that they had chances in the second half and miraculously missed them will just like destroy their will to play even more.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't have any great faith that Villa's going to show up and fight for much pride here against Swansea. So yeah, 3-0 sounds about right.
Brings us to Sunday. We just talked about the Tynemouth Derby. I think I agree with you. I think Sunderland could actually win this match, even though Newcastle are hosting. I'm going to predict a 2-1 Sunderland win.
I think it's going to be a draw. I think fans on either side are going to want and expect a win, and it's going to be a draw, and it'll be a stalemate for a while longer there down in the relegation zone.
Okay. All right. I would buy that too.
Yeah. Not a clean sheet. I think it'll be a 1-1 or a 2-2 draw.
Southampton, Liverpool, planning to start Virgil van Dijk in this match, but I'm a little nervous about it. I mean, would you rather start Virgil van Dijk at home to Liverpool or Hector Bellerin away to Everton?
Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah.
I feel like that's an easy decision.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, that's how I've got it lined up right now. But it's I feel a little better about Southampton this match because Liverpool will have played the second leg of their tie with Man United in the Europa League just a couple days before, and I'm sure they'll be going all out for that match.
Yeah, and, without a doubt.
Yeah, and that match is at Old Trafford, the one on Thursday. So that's going to be a pretty intense one, I think. So it could be a bit of a letdown game for them. So I think I'll predict like a 1-1 draw here.
Yeah, I would agree with your predictions. I'm sort of thinking a little more long-term with Liverpool, like kind of along the lines of Lukaku looking like a player that we're all going to want to get in for various double game weeks. Firmino is just... turned into a total stud at the late stages of the league here, and I feel like maybe not for the Southampton game, but in the next couple of weeks I want to find a way to work Firmino into my lineup.
It's amazing this Firmino turnaround. First David Silva, now Firmino. It's too much. I don't know who I'm talking to anymore.
The FPL changes you, Josh.
Yeah, I guess so.
You'd be a better person if you changed too.
I'm doing fine. I'm doing just great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you and Christian Eriksen are having a great time over there.
Man City, Man United, Manchester Derby, Derby Day, I just realized. Well, two derbies. I think that I don't know what to think about this one.
Yeah, they're both kind of garbage teams right now, but Man City has, I think, on paper the better players. It's just a matter of if
can Juan Mata play in this match. Has there been a match for Man United since then, like an FA match?
Oh, since his red card?
Oh, I think so because
they played West Ham.
West Ham. Okay, so Mata can play in this match.
Mata can play. That's going to be my team name next year. Yeah, it's just a matter of if City's elite players decide to show up and make it a game, then I think they could clean up against United. But it's the same could be said about Manchester United. I don't know.
It's hard to say. I mean, this is, you know, Man United were leaking goals maybe 10 or 11 weeks ago now, maybe even longer. And they went to Anfield. And you're like, okay, this is like, can't start your defender here. Like, it's going to be a slaughter. And then there was a 0-0 draw. So I could see them playing playing pretty defensively at the Etihad. And I could see this match being like a 0-0 draw or a 1-0 Man City win. I could see it being pretty low scoring.
Right.
So, I mean, because it's tempting to captain Aguero here, you know, just knowing how fired up he's going to be, knowing that it's going to be a full strength squad. But I'm just a little nervous given his form. And I don't know that he can score like two or three goals in this match.
So this is the ultimate test of our fear of Aguero, because I feel like of any week, this would be a great week to captain anybody but Aguero.
Right.
But yet the feeling remains that on his day, Aguero could put five past De Gea. Well, right. I guess that bears mentioning that De Gea and goal, that is one hell of a roadblock.
Yeah, it's.
But it's just, I'm curious to see if anybody beats Aguero in the captaincy poll leading up to this weekend.
Yeah, I am. I'm a little curious myself. Okay, so that brings us to the final fixture of the game week. Spurs host Bournemouth. I mean, we can't just dismiss Bournemouth. You know, they're playing great right now, and. It's not that their defense is the tightest, but they're certainly in every match, and so I wouldn't expect Spurs to you know walk all over them. But I do expect some goals in this match, so I can see this being a little bit like the Spurs. And Spurs will also they'll have had their the second leg of their Europa League tie with Borussia Dortmund, and that I think they just gave up on that one. I mean, they didn't like play any of their starters. Basically,
they did. It would be a weird turnaround by Pochettino to then play a full strength squad when they're coming in at such a disadvantage at the second leg.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, it could have been that he just took a risk, you know, or he took a gamble that they could, you know, hold it to 1-0 or 2-0. And the gamble didn't pay off, but he still feels obligated to go for it, you know, at home.
Maybe Harry Kane does play. I think that is the thing I'll be looking at most closely. If Harry Kane doesn't start against Dortmund, then I'm fairly certain I'm going to captain him against Bournemouth.
This is tricky because, you know, 3-0 at home, 3-0, they have to make up 3-0 at home. So, I mean, if Dortmund score any goal in that match, they've got to score five goals just to win. So, I don't know. I kind of think they won't go for it in the Europa League match. So I'll predict a 3-2 Spurs win here.
Interesting.
I don't know why I said two goals by Bournemouth, but they're just...
Yeah, I think that's rather ambitious.
Yeah, how about 3-1?
Yeah, I'd be on the fence about a clean sheet. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, I walked it back. I said 3-1. Okay. I feel a little better about 3-1.
Yeah, that seems about right. I'm going to be hoping for a Spurs clean sheet here. I think they'll do it. I'm gonna double down on my Taco Tuesday and say 3-0 to Spurs against Bournemouth.
All right, fair enough. Well, that's it, Brandon. A little longer than I thought. I thought it was going to be a shorter podcast, but
you say that every week, Josh.
I do. I think our chip discussion. we got so caught up in it, you know.
Josh, what you need to do is really listen to Tim Howard when he says # find your magic.
Mm-hmm, I know, that's true.
Yeah, get a little body spray.
All right, well that's your podcast, Brandon. Hail Cheaters.
Hail Cheaters. Poku Forever. How can people find us online? Because we're all over the place.
At Hail Cheaters, Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. And I'll talk to you soon. And hey, free Poku. When's he going to play?
Yeah, he didn't even make the starting. He didn't even make the 18 on Sunday. So this is a disappointment.
NYCFC, Patrick Vieira, driving me crazy.
All right, Josh. I'll see you. I'll see you out there in the universe.
All right. See you, Brandon. And go State. Go Spartans.
Always cheating. Always cheating.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.